Welcome everyone to Spotlight, and I'm Jennifer Thomas, the site director. This week I have the very nice task of interviewing one of the best people I've ever had the pleasure to work with, Barry Jennings. It's been approximately a year and a half ago when I approached Barry and asked him if he would consider becoming our new webmaster. It was a very, very lucky day for me and for each and every one of us on the site here when he agreed. I don't know if he would have said yes if he had known all the challenges ahead of him, but he has met every challenge and gone far beyond things I've asked for. He's both intelligent and creative and very, very dedicated to For the People. So, with that big build-up, Barry, you're going to have to really be good now in this interview. I'll ask everyone to please hold all comments and questions until we open the floor at the end of the interview. Barry, would you like to say hello and maybe start by telling us a little bit about your childhood and educational background?
Well, thanks, Jennifer, for the wonderful introduction. And it is a privilege to be working with all of you on the site. It's been a great time in my life to have the privilege of maybe making a few people's lives a little bit better with a site like this. My background really isn't all that different from a lot of you folks, I guess. I was born in Edmonton, Alberta. Lived my entire life in Canada. I am Canadian, and I had the usual kind of upbringing, I guess you could say. My parents were actually quite open-minded about the blindness issues. Were pretty easily dealt with, I think, in our family. There were no particular problems that way as far as having a normal childhood was concerned. I have a sister that's blind. She's 4 years older than me, so in some ways she kind of paved the way for me. One of the nice things when I was young was that I'm talking preschool, and I was thinking about this as I was getting up this morning. My parents really never. They weren't too protective, or they weren't overprotective, and what it meant was that when I was 5, 6 years old, I was able to go out into the neighborhood. In those days, things were different than today. You could actually let your child wander a block away from the house and not be too worried, because you knew the other parents would watch out, and you knew there was really no. Today, this would never happen, but. What it meant was that I got to play with the kids, got to learn how to interact with other people, got to do the kinds of things that, you know, we rode our bikes up and down the street, we did things, and you know the kids, it's amazing how quickly they learn. There was really no issue with my 6-year-old friends as far as if I was in some kid's house, we would just if there was some problem, trying to find something, or if I was lost in some way, that one of the other kids would help, and there was no real issue around that. Now, I went to the what was called the Ontario School for the Blind, now called the Ross McDonald School, and did my schooling there. Not the greatest experience, to be honest with you, and it's I think today things would be a lot different, but in those days, that was the school for the blind was schools for the blind weren't for most of us, I think, the greatest experiences. Although you get different kinds of feelings from different people. So that's the background up to what the teenage years.
Yeah, I know you've told me stories about some of the horrible food that y'all had to eat on a regular basis and those kind of things. Well, Barry, I know that you furthered your education I know that you travel well with a cane. You've had a guide dog. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and about your career?
Okay. Well, when I graduated from Brantford, I went right to grade 12. And when I graduated, we were just kind of on the cusp of the integration thing. It started in the mid-60s, and I graduated from Brantford in 69. So really there was, it would have been maybe possible for me to take the other route and integrate at about grade 7 or 8 probably, had I had the right people been enlightened, I guess. But nevertheless, I did get through to grade 12 in Brantford, and then went to a school in Edmonton because Ontario at the time had grade 13, and of course Alberta said, well, you have to get your Alberta grade 12 to be in a grade 13, that kind of thing. Well, I did. I kind of breezed through that. It was an interesting experience, sort of reintegrating, getting into the regular with the regular kids. But I did well. All things considered, I was a bit of a joiner, so that was a good thing. You know, I got involved in the ham radio club. I got involved in an interesting little group called the Human Survival Club, which was sort of a political thing, and a few other things. I was never afraid of getting into joining things, and that's a good thing. If for blind people, if you really want to get through that social barrier, that's sometimes a way around it, to just be a joiner and start get involved that way. Well, then I met this wonderful teacher, and his name was Mr. Murray. I'll never forget him for as long as I live. He was my first mentor as far as really getting my career started. He taught a course in the high school there in data processing. And it was unique. I'd never seen it at that time in any other school. He was a programmer in the summertime at right across the street at the Edmonton Public School Board, and he would teach in the wintertime. And his second level course, he did one at a grade 11 level and one at a grade 12 level. Well, I went back and took the first one because I thought I want to learn this stuff. The second one though. He actually taught programming, and I learned two programming languages, or at least the basis of them. And the value of this was that to most kids it was just another elective course. It was nothing. But I could see in this man that I had the beginnings of something. So I don't think he ever saw the end of me. I think he was probably in the end he was glad to see me leave. But he was just wonderful. He gave me extra work to do, and of course I actually had access to the computer. I didn't actually go in there directly, but I would, you know, prepare my programs, and he would take them across the street and he would run them for me and bring them back. And it was, boy, did I learn a lot from that man. It was just a wonderful experience. And for people who think that teachers can't make a difference in a young person's life, think again, because this was amazing. Also did some interesting things with media. We actually had a TV studio there with cameras and the whole nine yards, and I got involved in that. And you know, we did drama. I actually did a TV show one time, which was kind of fun. But then moved on from there. There was a computer course in Winnipeg that everybody was taking. All the blind folks who were interested were taking at the time. I could have gone to university, and it was an option. And I thought hard about it, but I decided to do this to see where it led. And the only thing I can say is bad course, but it placed a lot of people, which including me. So I guess in the long run it was a good thing for me, although the individual who ran the program didn't have a clue as to how to do it properly. But in spite of him, people did get good jobs, so I guess we can say it worked.
Well, we're really glad you developed your career, Barry, that's for sure. I think one of the stories you've told me that I absolutely love, and I think it demonstrates how determined and how creative you are, is about the Braille translator you designed. And I think it's a fascinating story. Would you tell us that one right now?
Sure. About 3 years, I guess, after I started with Hydro, I approached. This is a story of someone who's naive, who doesn't realize things just aren't done this way. But you know, somehow I just had some dumb luck. I approached. They had a program in government at the time in the province called Career 75. 75 coming from the year, the summer year. It was meant to employ students. So I approached them about getting a grant, and it took me about a week, I guess. What I did was I went to them, and then I came to my employer and said, would you let me have some computer time? That was a pretty brash request in those days, because computer time wasn't cheap. In those days, we didn't understand, we didn't have PCs. It was mainframes, and mainframe time could be hundreds of dollars an hour. But I did it anyway. My boss at the time was very, very supportive. I have to say that he had a lot to do with my being able to move ahead with this. So what we agreed upon was the company would donate 2 hours a day to the effort. And I would be able to carry on at night and work, and I could have I could have the computer time, I could have, you know, the full right to, and I could also bring in students to work with me. So that's what I did. I hired 5 students, 4 of them blind. I got the grant from the provincial government to pay their salaries. We got about $15,000, which was quite a bit for that time. And we went about the business of developing a Braille transcription system. Our idea was Braille on demand, and you know, we did a lot of research too. We wrote to different places. At all this time I was developing the software, and we were doing test books. So the kids would come in and get on these horrible key punch machines and enter the data for the books, because we wanted to have enough varied material to test the system. And in the end, I came up with a pretty neat product. It was capable of doing Braille books end to end without very much intervention. It was I even anticipated paperless Braille, which was something new at the time. By separating the transcribing, the translation from the formatting, so that the two steps were separate. So if you wanted to take the same Braille book and print it on a 1x40 paperless Braille versus a 25-line paper, that was you didn't have to go back and retranslate, which was kind of interesting. And I remember about 6 months later going down to Palo Alto, because I had this broken Opticon and just relied on those things. For those of you who don't remember the Opticon, it was something that a lot of us relied on back in the 70s. And I went down there to get this thing fixed. And while I was there, I spoke with one of the engineers at TSI, and I said, "Guess, you know, I have this idea for a paperless Braille. You know, we should talk about it. You know, having some kind of media for storing it on and having it print on a what I was describing was what most people know now today as a Braille display. Well." He said, "It's odd that you would mention that, because we're just starting to develop one. It's called a VersaBraille. So it was an interesting that I had the same idea that they did back before there was a product. So yeah, the Braille project was an interesting thing. I actually carried it on for another summer and hired one student, and we were close. I was doing some of the finer things, like how to do tables in Braille, which is kind of a challenge for Braille transcribers when you see a table in a book. How to automate these tables, and there was work yet to do, but it was an interesting experience. Unfortunately, the money ran out, and I discovered then just how naive I had been, thinking that, well, I got money to begin with, it was easy, and then realized that from here on it wasn't going to be easy, and so the thing just slowly died, and unfortunately, I guess, but it was a real learning experience, and it did employ some students who are blind for a whole summer, so I feel pretty good about it.
It's just a great story, Barry. Would you like to talk about your career in programming at this point? And just kind of run with it. Take it whatever direction you want, Barry.
Okay. Well, this is kind of hard to... Where do I start? To be honest with you, it isn't just a straight progression. There have been times in throughout the career that I thought that I was going to change careers. One example was when the Braille project died, and when I was looking around for something else to do, and was getting kind of bored with, in a way, with the computer industry as a whole, because it wasn't very exciting. In the late 70s, it was all mainframes. There wasn't very much happening as far as it seemed kind of stagnant to me, so I started looking around for new opportunities, new things, hope maybe change the career. My first foray into this area was to try to look into radio and the media. And that was an interest of mine anyway, from early childhood. I've already talked about my experience with the TV studio, and that was a lot of fun. And so I decided to try it, and I took some night courses. Decided in the end that it wasn't practical for a number of reasons. One, some of the people I was meeting, and I actually had a guy next door to me who was doing the two-year diploma course in radio, and from BCIT, and they place people in major market stations. It's been a great program. I think they call it broadcast journalism. And he used to bring his audition tapes, you know, over to let me hear them every once in a while. That was kind of interesting at the time. Interestingly enough, at the time, I didn't think he was very good. Next thing I know, he's in a major market, and he's sounding great. So, but I decided the egos in that business weren't. I just couldn't abide them. I guess you have to have ego to be in the radio business. I didn't. You know, to think that you can actually get up there and perform in front of a bunch of people, it's probably it takes some ego. But I don't know, it just wasn't my thing. So then I did three courses in broadcast journalism. The one that I did that I really enjoyed was radio and TV announcing. That was really fun. In fact, the guy that taught it was wonderful, and to be honest with you, I did very well in it, and he gave me a lot of encouragement, thinking that it was maybe a possibility. But I just decided in the end that it probably wasn't the right thing. Then I took a completely different tack. I decided, well, maybe I want to stay in business in a more traditional business, and I started to do my certified general accounting, which was night courses and 5 years long, if you assuming that you don't fail any courses. And I did that for 2 years and decided at the end I hated accounting. It was just, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't see myself doing audits. I couldn't see myself being in that business. It just, ugh. So, but it did help in many ways, because now when I go out to see a client and I have to understand their business, chances are that that time I spent doing studying accounting was useful. So from there, I don't know. It's PCs came about 1980 or so, and from then on, it was no doubt in my mind what I was going to do. The whole area of PCs and finally the internet is just a terribly exciting thing, and I expect I'll be doing that until I'm 6 feet under.
Well, that's good news to me. You want to tell us some about what you're doing now, Barry? And you've shared with me that you believe that the programming profession would be much tougher for young people coming up or new programmers to be as successful as you have been. I think it'd be real interesting to hear about that as well.
Yeah, I'm really sad about that, really. But it's sadly it's true. The business now compared to the business then is terribly, terribly demanding. You've got these you're competing with these consultants that drive their employees terribly, terribly hard. You know, the Anderson Consultings of the world, although they're not driving anybody anywhere these days, and companies like it. The accessibility issues, we had accessibility issues in our day that were different ones, but the pace was somehow slower, so you could grapple with them. Today, it's like a new product comes in, a new development tool comes in, it's here today, by next week we want you to be productive on it. So it's the speed of change and the is hard. Now that's not to say that a blind person can't get into the field and can't do this sort of thing, but what I'm seeing is that the ones that are getting involved these days aren't working for other people, they're working for themselves. Mostly because they can choose their tools and they can choose, so they can make an accessible or a more accessible environment for themselves than they otherwise could if someone else is choosing what they have to use. And I think there's some real, and as I say, the pace is just frantic sometimes. So when you're really experienced, you can have strategies for coping with that fast pace, and also because you've won some respect already, that you don't have to keep earning it. So whereas a new person coming in, the first mistake they make, or the first time something happens, they're going, you know, your employer's going, oh my gosh, what have I done? I got this blind person. I have to give you an example of a rookie mistake, and this is really, really funny. This would have been, 2-3 years after I started working, and we have what's called T4s up here in Canada. Those are the documents that you get that tell everybody what you earned, or tell the tax department what you earned. So it's got all of your income and all of your deductions and everything on the T4. Well, now what happens is that pensioners get T4As, and I was looking after a system that looked after pensioners of the company. People that had worked there now were on pension and had to be, and we had a little system that kept track of them. And at the end of the year, we had to do these T4As, which were like T4s, except they were for pensioners. Well, turns out that I did this thing. There's a deadline. They had to be in the person's hands by February 28th, the forms, you know, and everything. And the program would spit all these T4As out one after another. Well, it turns out that we started getting phone calls about 3 days before the deadline, 2 days before the deadline. My SI number, that's the SI number is like a social security number. Well, my SI number is wrong. And it didn't take very many phone calls or very many people talking about this before I realized what I had done. My program had put the wrong SI on every form. I can't remember whether it was the next person's form or the previous person's form, but we sent out 3,000 T4As to everybody with the wrong SI number on them. And here we go. Now it's February 26, 2 days before, and we had to scramble around. We had to bring another guy in overtime. The two of us worked and got this thing straightened out and got those things in the mail. But that's the kind of thing that a rookie mistake, when you're a rookie, can kill you. You make a mistake later on, and there's because of the respect, you might get a little bit of leeway. But yeah, it's very, very hard for a blind person to do it in a traditional environment these days, just because of the speed and everything. And I think most people will tell you that. Although I if somebody's driven enough, I'd say that it still can be done.
Yeah, I can just imagine a company handing out the equivalent of 3,000 wrong W-2 forms. It sounds like a nightmare. Barry, I'd like everyone to get an idea of just how dedicated you are to For the People. You do so much work on the site, hours really every day, and a great part of every weekend. Tell us a little bit about your work day, what time you get up and leave home and get back home again.
Yeah, okay. I'm up at 5 a.m. in the morning, and I guess there's some redundancy for you, hey? 5 a.m. I'm up at 5 o'clock. I go, probably leave here about 6, shortly after 6. I'm at my desk by 7, quarter after 7, thereabouts. My work really starts about 7:30. I'm there till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm usually back home by about 5:36. So most of the work, if it's during the week, any work that I do has to be done after 6 o'clock at night. That would be 9 your time, in Eastern time. And weekends. So probably, I don't know what the average I spend on the site working on things. Some weeks it's not that much, some weeks it's a lot, but if I were to look at it, it's probably averages in the 15 to 20 hour a week kind of thing. Particularly last winter when we were doing some major things to the site, some of them that you'll see in the future, that the membership will see in the future, I think I spent an awful lot of time. I could maybe the whole weekend could be eaten up on For the People. But you know, as much effort as it is, it's not hard to do, because I keep reminding myself every day of what it's for. And not a lot of people actually get to use what they've spent their whole life training themselves to do, to actually use for the good of the world. And I think to have that privilege is special, and I think not many get that opportunity. So I feel lucky in many ways to have been able to find this place and have a chance to, in my own way, make it better.
Well, that was said beautifully, Barry, and I know you mean it from your heart. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on right now before we take questions?
No, I don't think so. I think this we've pretty much said about as much as there is. I'm thinking that I'm just thinking back. I think there's probably about as much as anybody wants to hear. So I think the best thing to do now would probably be to throw it open, and people can just ask questions.
All right, who'd like to ask Barry a question?
Oh, I would. Barry, could you, especially for the beginning of the preseason or before that, can you tell us how the technology has evolved since you started in computers until now?
Oh, it's well, it has. It has evolved. It's evolved both for sighted and blind people, actually. And you can talk about how technology for us for we visually impaired folks has evolved, and how computing in general has evolved. Well, when I started, we were writing programs on punch cards. All data was on pretty much. We had storage devices like hard disks and tapes and things like that. That they were very expensive. Memory was very expensive. I learned on a computer that was 64K of RAM in it, and that was mind that and that was the school board computer. It took a whole room to house it, quite a big room actually. And well, now, I was just reading the other day that there's a computer that can run Windows XP coming out for this Christmas, and it's 9 ounces.
Okay, let's go into more of for a blind person, like a screen readers. Of course, you used DOS back then when you first started, but let's talk about more for the blind person's point of view.
Well, there wasn't very much when I started. My first output, a meaningful output from a computer, was in Braille, and we had a Braille terminal at the course for the blind that I took, the thing at University of Manitoba. But oddly enough, the guy that ran the thing said, "Oh, you won't have that at work, so you shouldn't use it." So I used to sneak in there anyway, later on, and so because then there was another thing that we were doing at that time called I don't know what you'd call it, rubber band Braille, or we had printers in those days weren't laser printers. They were what we referred to now as impact printers. They were the fast ones were like a rotating chain with letters. You'd rotate at several RPMs or several thousand RPMs, and the chain, the letters would go by, and the hammers would whack, and the letters would go on the page. Well, what we did, and I actually wrote a program for myself that did this sort of thing. It took all the took print before it got to the printer, translated all the characters into configurations of dots that looked like Braille, and then the operator in the computer room would put a kind of a sewing machine elastic, a wide elastic band across the back, set up the printer for heavy, and what would happen was the output would come out in Braille. And I lived off that output for probably 2 years. Then there were reading devices that came out, the Kurzweil, the Opticon, those kinds of things that helped a lot. Screen readers, I guess, were in the early 80s, and they were DOS, and everybody knows about the old DOS, or many of us do, the old DOS screen readers, and they eventually evolved into Windows screen readers. I used one called WindowBridge in 92. The first one I got hold of it was just been out for 2 months, crashed and burned all the time, and we struggled with them, and we still struggle with them today, but it's getting much, much better. So there has been a kind of a parallel evolution of products for us, as along with the evolution of computers.
Anybody else have a question or a comment for Barry?
Yes. Oh, excuse me. Barry, have you had come across prejudice at your work site, and how do you handle it?
I'm sorry, have I come across what?
Prejudice.
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, for the most part, no. I've run into people that were difficult, that obviously held some of the stereotypes. It does make life difficult sometimes. But I have to say that, for the most part, my experience with other people has been positive. And I think they'd say the same thing about me, I hope. You're never going to go through a whole career without encountering some of it. That just goes with the territory, and you have to deal with it. I had a dog in there for 8 years, and that was one of the. The dog actually helps sometimes, because it's a wonderful icebreaker. People like puppy dogs, and that sometimes will loosen people up a little bit. But yeah, most of the experience is positive. I've had bosses, the odd boss I don't like. Most of them I have liked. I've had the odd client that was difficult. But most clients have been great. So I haven't had any of the real horror stories that I've heard from other people.
Barry. It's been very interesting hearing your story. I guess what I've got to say is more of a comment. Back in the 80s, I had the opportunity to do programming, but I chose not to. I thought it would be a good idea because basically I'm a word processor, or I was back then, and I thought, well, I always like to know what made a computer function, but I thought the 3 years at the time was a bit too much study at that time, and I wasn't prepared to put a lot of time into it. However, in the years gone by, I wish I had have done that, because I found that the lack of computer knowledge I had affected, I guess, my understanding of how DOS operated and Windows operated, and it took me 3 years, with no exaggeration, to actually get past that, the Windows concept. And I can honestly say I've had no Windows formal training apart from word processing, and most of the information and things that I've learned have been online from people like yourself, who have a lot of knowledge in the background, or who have had no fear of, you know, exploring computers. And I've personally benefited by meeting people like yourself. And I think it must be harder today with all of the products that come out, because by the time you actually buy a computer and it's, you know, off the shelf, there's something else that has exceeded it. So I think it is hard, but I guess there's always where there is a will, there is a way. So I think I'm certainly glad that technology has, you know, improved over the years, but in some ways it does make things more difficult to try and find ways around it.
Well, Avi, I think that it's not just the technology itself. I mean, it's easy to get caught up in worrying about whether or not you're confident with technology or not, or whether I think it's also how we use it, and do we have the wisdom to know how to use it the way it could be used, and I think there's I've kind of lost my train of thought now, but the technology is only a vehicle, and we have to remember that. And the fact that people struggle with it a little bit just says to people like me that we have to do a better job of making it easier for you to use. It's not. You know, we're still at a very primitive stage, I think, with the way computers are. I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of growth and change, and I think what a real test of how we do with that growth and change is how the average person who isn't terribly literate in the technology, just wants to use it, how they, what their experience is, and whether they can actually keep up and participate. Because if that doesn't happen, then I think the whole exercise is just a kind of an academic one, not terribly valuable.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that makes a lot of sense what you've just said, and thanks for that.
Barry, do you ever foresee a day when we'll have a computer that is easy to operate, whether you're blind or sighted, that is not frustrating and makes you pull your hair out, and will just be an appliance that you can depend on?
Yes.
I like that answer.
Yeah, well, how long will it take? When is it coming?
What are you going to design that, Barry?
Hey, if we did it too quickly, we wouldn't be able to hear you guys complain all the time. That's half the fun.
On another level, there probably wouldn't be any work for computer support people either, which is sort of my background. One thing I was going to mention, it's Ed Burns, by the way, Barry. You were referring to, you know, programming and blind people being successful with it today as opposed to 10, 15 years ago. Would I be right in concluding that the expectations of users and the average user, being that that's changed over the last 10 or 15 years, and their expectations and a greater focus on the ease with which people can interact with computers has made the programming field more challenging for, say, a blind person getting into it today? Because, I mean, if you look at the profile of a computer user now as opposed to the profile like 10 or 15 years ago, they are like night and day. Or at least that's my take on it.
Absolutely. The bar, that's what I think I sort of, I think I talked about that a little bit earlier. It's the speed of change and the bar being raised so high. It's absolutely, that is a problem. In order to be able to be in this field today, you don't just have to be, you have to be more than a programmer. In fact, in my, I found that it isn't just programming. I found that my ability to write has been a blessing, you know, to be able to write well. The ability to know what people want, or to have an instinct for what people, what they'll like and what they won't like. And yes, all the visual aspects of it. So one of the things you have to be as a blind person very good at is the ability to have the ability to visualize and to. For most blind people, I think designing a screen from scratch, from a blank form, that was a good looking GUI type screen, would be challenging for them, because you have to have this concept of proportion and space, and you know, where, how big should a button be anyway, and how far should this be from here, and oh, I have a graphic you want to put here, where should it go? And even if I can't see it, I have to have an idea of what it, where it would look good. And there's just a whole bunch of things that we, even 15 years ago, didn't have to deal with, because they mostly, up until about the mid-80s, all our output was text.
Does anyone else have a question for Barry? Barry, if I could lead a standing ovation for you, I certainly would, my friend. And if anyone else has a question or a comment, we're getting pretty close to the witching hour here.
Barry, I would just like to say, and I'm sure I can speak for everyone here, a very big thank you to you for all of your very hard work and dedication on behalf of For the People. 15 to 20 hours is probably an underestimate of some of the times you spend, I know for a fact, and I certainly appreciate it.
We all do, Barry. Thank you very much. And thanks for a great interview. I enjoyed it.
I had one more question, Barry. What do you do during the day? What is your job?
Well, let's see. What am I doing? It depends on the day, but I have clients. Currently, I have probably 4 or 5 applications that I look after, spread across 3 clients. And occasionally, I get involved in other things too. But the whole company is going through a business, what they call financial business transformation. It's a fancy way of saying that they're taking all their old accounting systems, throwing them away, and starting over. And I have a major client out that manages a fleet of vehicles. It's about 3,000 or so. Actually, I guess it's about 4,000 vehicles now, and they have external customers too. So my job is to keep their systems going when there are problems. And right now, for example, because of this business transformation, and because we thought that unit was being sold and going to be out of the company, we ignored them for 3 or 4 years, and suddenly now are realizing that by April we're gonna have to find a way to reintegrate them into this newfangled way of doing business. And so I'm working on my life after April stuff right now. What am I gonna? How are we gonna fix this broken world? And that's not unlike what a lot of people do in our office. Basically just keeping ahead of problems and fixing them or occasionally developing new solutions for clients and that sort of stuff. So I guess that's basically it.
I have a question. Could you explain to me exactly what your area of knowledge is based on web design? For instance, I mean, are you doing more than just simple HTML? And if so, exactly what other areas have you explored?
Yeah, in fact, this website, you don't see it, but the website has an awful lot that isn't HTML. Most of the, if you go back, for example, and look on the page that displays the room names, that is all driven from a back end. When Jennifer builds a new room, all she does is go into a database and add an entry to a database, and then you guys have your new room. But beyond that, I've done everything from mainframes to desktop applications to websites to all sorts of. It kind of runs the gambit now, and I've worked on at least 4 operating systems that I can think of.
Well, let me rephrase the question. I guess it wasn't very clear. I mean, other than HTML, exactly what are you doing? Are you doing CGI scripting? Or what else? Those components that deal strictly with the web?
With the web, yeah, it's pretty well all CGI. I'm starting to look at Java as an option, if I can get the access bridge to work. But yeah, all of the things that are on the web, I don't get into the really highly visual, a lot of the graphic design and the that sort of thing. But yes, I'm doing CGI, I'm doing databases, I'm doing all the things that the common things that you see on websites, and I'm doing standalone and client server things as well. So on a lot more platforms than just Windows. So, and in fact, to survive in this business, a blind person can't survive and just do web front end. You have to know a lot more than that to be able to be in the field seriously.
I would just like to take my hat off to you, Barry, and say that you're one of the examples of blind people to really look toward and up to. And I just think you're awesome, and it's good to know you.
Well, it's it was my lucky day when I stumbled across this place. It's really been a kind of a springboard, and as I said before, it's wonderful to just be able to use what you know how to do to make it possible for other people to grow and change and excel and or just maybe make new friends. So it's been a great experience for me, and I wouldn't think twice about if I had to do it over again.
Yep, and you're not allowed to disappear.
Not only that, but are you still involved with that camp where you were 2 summers ago?
Oh yeah, that's an interesting story that some of you have heard, but others haven't. Thank you, Bob, for bringing that up. I was involved with a camp sometime for 5 years in a row called SCORE. It stands for Summer Computer Opportunities in Recreation and Education. The original SCORE camp, and still is, the first sponsor was the Gretzky family. That would be Wayne Gretzky and the hockey player. Walter still goes there every year and speaks at the banquets and meets the kids. It's for 16 to 18 year olds. They have there's a strong recreational component. They take them places like swimming and horseback riding and all sorts of other fun things. And then they do the IBM very, very generously give us the classroom space in their main plant in Toronto. Just state-of-the-art everything, a person to support us if we run into trouble with the servers, and the kids basically do a website in the time that they have, and it's really, it doesn't matter what they do. That's not the main thing is that component, the strength of that, the computer component, is that it promotes teamwork. They actually have to get together in groups, and each takes a chunk of the site, and they have to figure out how they're going to do it, and then they got to pick a rep from their team, and those reps have to get together and talk about really how they integrate it all, and it's an awesome week, and you see a lot of growth in people in that week and a half that you spend in the classroom. So I did it for 5 years. I didn't do it this year because I just felt I was too busy, and 5 years was sort of enough, but I enjoyed the experience. It was wonderful. And it was wonderful to reconnect with young people, and wonderful to see how blind people were doing today versus how they did when I was getting out of school. And I remember the first year I was there, John, my good buddy John Lyon, who you fellows haven't met, he's sort of one of my, I depend on him a lot for some of my ideas and some things that have found their way into this website actually have come from him. And he made the comment, you know, talking about the kids, they're just normal goofy teenagers. They're not so serious the way we were when we were teenagers. And I thought, yeah, it's an interesting comment. And the difference was, of course, that these kids came out of an integrated environment versus the schools for the blind and the things that the kinds of mixed environments that we had. So it was interesting. And I see the kids today, and I'm actually in a lot of ways kind of pleasantly surprised at how well they fit in with their sighted peers, and how in many ways they have fewer social problems than what we had.
Well, Barry may be willing to stay later if anyone else has questions, but it's time to wrap up. I want to thank Becky for all her help in coordinating Spotlight and make it happen, reminding me today for sure, and Dennis for recording so faithfully every week, and thank you everyone for coming, and Barry once again, just thank you. for all you do and how wonderfully you do it.
It's a pleasure, Jen, and it's been a wonderful experience. Thanks.